Golf Smarter, number 589, published on April 25, 2017, is brought to you by our newest podcast, Radio Baseball Cards. Radio Baseball Cards is a two-minute show with the greatest baseball players of the 20th century telling stories about their lives in and around the game. Our first five episodes are now available featuring Hall of Famers Hank Aaron, Duke Snider, Pee Wee Reese, Whitey Ford, and the introduction is by legendary NFL coach and video game legend John Madden. This week, Radio Baseball Cards features Hall of Fame pitcher Warren Spahn talking about the excitement of opening day. One of my all-time favorite lines that came out of this show came from this episode, which I've been quoting for 30 years now. Warren Spahn says, you know, the ballpark is an empty place until you put people in it. Really? I love that. And that's Warren Spahn for you. Radio Baseball Cards is now available in iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, SoundCloud, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. How to play golf with your spouse or your child without spoiling your relationship with Elena King.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Elena.
Hey, Fred, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. I always look to have women on the show and don't always succeed, so I'm really happy to have you on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, so thank you.
You're impressive. I mean, your awards, your list of awards are very impressive. Mental game coach, best instructor for women, top 25 elite junior coach in the United States, Golf Digest, best in state, and LPGA Central Section Teacher of the Year. Very impressive. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
How'd you do that?
A lot of hard work and a lot of great students. To me, it's a collaboration. My students succeeding and me being their guide. And so to me, it's more of a team effort.
Awesome. Awesome. So when someone comes to you and says the obvious thing that they always, I'm sure, always say is, I want to be more consistent. I want more distance. Right? Am I missing anything? It's pretty much those two.
Those are two on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Of course, you want to score better.
And yeah, I want lower scores. But that's going to come when I'm more consistent. And then the one that cracks me up, I'm not going to get fitted for clubs until I'm more consistent. No. Start with getting fitted for clubs, and you'll see a change in your game almost immediately. Right?
I agree. Equipment fit is so important. For everyone, I think people will go, oh, I'm not good enough. But our equipment definitely affects our motion, and we want our equipment to be neutral. So I always relate it to other sports that someone plays. If we had a tennis racket and all of a sudden I gave you a tennis racket that was way too heavy, it would certainly throw off your normal serve motion. Or if you gave Michael Jordan a heavy basketball, his free throw motion would change. So we want to keep our equipment as neutral as possible so it helps our swing, that we're able to make our own natural swing. But if I have something too heavy, too stiff, too light, or too flexible, I'm going to start compensating for that in other ways. So I agree with you. Equipment is very, very important when we're starting the game or as we can continue on.
Excellent. Thank you for agreeing with me. I hate when I say stuff and nobody agrees. It's like, no, Fred, you're completely off on this one.
One for one, we're good.
I thought a fun topic to talk about today would be playing with your spouse. It's one of the more entertaining things that I ever see on the golf course. And since you have such success of and being the best instructor for women, I thought that you could probably give a lot of advice to men on how to play with the woman in your life and maintain your relationship. It's just amusing is far from the word that I want to use when I see guys playing with their spouses and just constantly giving instruction of what they're supposed to do. And like, no, your hands. And it's like, and you can't do that on the golf course.
No.
You should never do it.
There's a couple of roads we can go down. One is, how do we handle like the technique portion of it? And then how do we handle, like, oh, maybe you might want to hit a wedge here instead of your 7-iron or whatever that might be. But I think to back up, a good starting point is I think it's really important for either spouse, one way or the other, to ask them, go, is it okay for me to give you advice? Would you like me to do that? Or do I have permission if I see something that I think could help you, do I have your permission to say so? Because I think women in particular, we're very concerned about doing things the right way. We want to look good. We want to put our bag in the right place. So we're very self-conscious about those things to start. And they want to play golf. They want to play with their husband. As our generation is getting older, we're seeing a lot of couples want to have something to do together. And it's a great way to start. But I've also heard many times, I no longer want to play with my husband. I don't want to ride in the cart with him. Or my wife is always bossing me around on the golf course.
Oh, really? You get men complaining too?
Yeah. It goes both ways. So I think first step is just seeing if it's okay for you to say something. And then if they agree to that, then I would say even in that time, if you're on the fifth hole, say, you know, Susie, Joe, whatever it is, you know, I noticed something. I observed this. Would you like my feedback or would you like a suggestion? Mm-hmm. It's a much better way to approach it. It's not confrontational that way, or it's not bossy, or I'm the know-it-all. Because a lot of times what I have found with couples or golfers in general is because something works for me, I'm dying to tell it to someone else. I think because it works for me, it's going to work for you.
Sure.
And unfortunately, that's just not the case. So I think it's always good to ask permission, tell someone what they observed or what they saw versus this is what I think you should do because it worked for me. Now I think it's going to work for you. And that is definitely not the case because what works for me may not work for you. So I think that's a great starting point.
Yeah. I usually what I would say to someone is, would you mind an observation? Right.
Love it.
Yeah. And then they'll either say yes or no. And then if they say no, it's like, okay, never mind. Right.
Good.
But what I would never do, especially on the golf course while we're playing, is that observation would never be about their mechanics. Mm. It's like, I'll help you on, hey, you know what? If you stood behind the ball to line up your shot, you'll have a better sense of where you're going as opposed to just standing over the ball and staring at the ball for a while. Or, hey, you know, there's a line on the golf ball if you want to help line up your putt type of thing. Those kind of things, I think, are helpful and useful. But when you're giving instruction to somebody and you're not qualified to give instruction, in the middle of a round, how do they incorporate that without practicing it, right?
No, they can't. And then it gets worse. So whether you're qualified to give that information or not, I really try to avoid at all possible costs giving technical information when I do my on-course coaching. And one of the things that I love to do is a lot of on-course coaching. I run a monthly coaching program and it's been very successful because what the people love is the on-course coaching that we give. But we give them specific assignments. We're not saying, oh, no, you know, you went over the top or, you know, you doing this or that. We talk more about have you made a commitment to your shot? Are you able to stay focused? What's the interference? What's getting in your way? You know, what's creating the tension in your swing? Those are the things that I love to work with on course because I think the skill, of course, we want to make it better. I always talk it in those terms. Our skill, we want it to be great, right? Everybody wants skill to increase, but it takes a long time.
Yeah.
Skill acquisition to be effective and have a really high skill level takes a lot of time and a lot of practice. But what we can help people with right away is being more committed, you know, being more positive on the course, the ability to stay more focused, manage the interference, manage our self-talk. Those things are what we kind of lump together as call someone's state, mentally, emotionally, and physiologically. So their state can immediately affect their game one way or the other. The skill takes much longer. And what typically we see is if we go, oh, let me have you try and make a much bigger turn on your backswing on the fourth tee. Well, now they get a lot of chatter and their timing is completely off. They have might have made that great turn that you want them to make, but now their timing's off. They hit it bad. Now they've lost confidence. And boy, the negative self-talk starts, and it can spiral downhill quickly. And I've made that mistake on the golf course, and I really try to avoid working on that. There's a time and a place for working on skill acquisition and technique, and you know that is on the range. We want you to take it to the course, but to try something new on the course, I'm not a big fan of.
I don't blame you one bit. I am not either. I love the idea of on-course instruction. I wish I could do it, but usually if I'm out on a golf course with a teacher, we're recording a conversation. But there's a tremendous amount of value, but you don't work on the mechanics. What are the things specifically that you do work on when you are on the course with someone?
Well, it goes in two directions. One would, again, be back to the state. And I'll talk about that. The other avenue that I would go is a little bit more course management. You know, if the flag is back right and there's a bunker, where do we want our next shot to come in from? People, I was out on the course the other day with a high school, real good high school player, and I forget that they don't know these things because they haven't been coached. I'm like, you know, let's really think through your shot. Whether we execute or not is always a different story, but at least we have a good plan. So when we have a good plan, we're more prepared. It gives us more confidence. So I think that's very important to just really have a good plan on the golf course. So like I said, maybe it's playing the course backwards or, you know, what's the wind doing? How much does it really affect my shot? So course management is the one direction we go. And then the other one, like I was saying, is the state. So a starting thing might be, let's just play this first hole and see if we can hold our finish in balance. Because balance is extremely important in the golf swing. I talk about it all the time. And if we're focused on balance, it does a couple of things. One, it keeps us in balance. Two, it helps us rotate, which is so important in the golf swing. And we have to, for the most part, swing within ourselves. We can't swing like a crazy person and hold our finish in balance. So
It took me years to figure out. Oh, my gosh. It really has taken me a long time to not swing out of my shoes and stay in balance at the end of my swing. It's amazing.
It's so important. And I love, you know, we love club head speed. We're not trying to slow that down. Like the kids, what I tell them, you can swing as hard as you want if you can hold your finish in balance. So they love that. And that's a challenge for them.
Right.
Because we want to create the speed. Everybody wants to hit it far. Golf is a lot more fun when you can hit it farther.
I'll tell you, the most fun I've ever had playing golf is when I was playing really well. It's amazing
how frustrating. How that happens.
Yeah, I mean, like all of a sudden, I had a goal that I set for myself of trying to get to more rounds in the 70s than in the 90s over a 20 round stretch, and I've accomplished it once,
That's great, though.
But it was great, and I was having so much fun. I was hitting the upper 70s, and it was unbelievable.
So as a coach, I'd ask you, what was so different when you were shooting in the 70s than what's going, if on Saturday you shot 78 and on Sunday it went to 92, did you go to bed and your skill change?
I think that it was a lot of confidence in the clubs that I was playing. I was feeling comfortable finally, and not beating myself on the green, beating myself up on the green. It's like, you missed a 3-footer, you suck. All you have to do is watch the PGA Tour, and you'll all of a sudden going, they miss short putts too? I'm okay.
Yeah, and they move on to the next hole because it is going to happen.
Right.
They miss fewer than we do, but yes, but they do have the ability to take away something positive. I love the interviews at the end of a tournament when someone maybe didn't win. Like Phil Mickelson is, I think, a genius at that. No matter what happens, he's always talking about the positive things that he did, and they got away with it. So, that is so important because those are the things that we're storing. And we much rather be storing the positive than storing the negative.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned state and course management. It's what Golf Smarter is all about. I mean, I've been saying from the very beginning is that I feel that you can lower your scores faster if you have a strong mental game or maybe even a strong emotional game and understand course management as opposed to just working on your mechanics.
I would totally agree with that. So when a client will come to me, I always want to sit down. We're usually together for a couple of hours because I want to get as much information from them as I can. I'll talk with them. I'll have them fill out online assessments, and we'll actually go out on the course and I'll observe them play. And at the end of the assessment, it usually kind of comes down to, I think, are two roads. One is we're going to take what you have. You know, you're still working. You don't have the time to go out and play, or maybe physically you have some sort of restriction that, you know, our swing is probably not going to change a lot. Now, if we've been playing for 30, 40 years, wow, how many hours of practice would it take to really change something in our swing? So we're going to go, okay, this is one road. We're going to stay here. We're going to do the things that we can do with what you have and make you play better golf and help you enjoy the game more. So it's more about that self-discovery, what they can learn about themselves and how they can play better, how they play their best golf. And then the other road would be probably someone who is more serious about their game. They want to be more competitive, and we're going to sit down and go, if we're going to make a change, big if, what would that be? What's required to do that? And are we both 100% committed to making this change?
So I think, and the time commitment to make the change, yeah.
Absolutely. So being very clear on the direction that we're going, I think, is very, very important when it comes to golf coaching.
Yeah, yeah. I have a saying that I use almost every single round that I learned from one of the listeners, one of the Golf Smarter listeners. And people in the audience, the Golf Smarter audience, have heard me say this a million times, so just sing along with me if you're listening. And that is, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
I like it.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do we hit it, you know, off to the side, but you can see the pin through the trees and it's only 140 yards. Like, oh, I can see the pin. I can do that. No, you can't. And if you try, you're going to end up with a double or a triple bogey. But if you just put the ball back into the fairway, a simple shot, don't crush it, and then get yourself in, you're going to bogey the hole. So why is that so difficult, right? But
I think it becomes difficult because what happens within us is when we get mad, when we get frustrated, we no longer make good decisions because things are happening in our brain and in our body physiologically. It's creating a lot of tension. And we just we no longer make good decisions. So that's where people come up with these blow up holes, hit a couple bad shots. Now, you know, the wheels have completely come off. So being able to manage your state, use your breathing skills, managing your self-talk, all of these things are so important to avoid the big blow up holes.
You mentioned earlier on about women being more self-conscious than men. What are the differences? What do you notice that the differences are that women bring to the first tee that men don't have a clue about?
That's a great question. I can't speak for men, but you can do that. You can take that piece. I think that women are more aware. They allow other things to bother them. They wonder what Susie's thinking, and they wonder, if am I playing fast enough? Am I holding someone up? Where, I don't know this for fact, but I don't think those things are as important to men on the golf course. They're kind of paying attention to what they're doing, where the woman on the golf course is, oh, am I standing in the right place? So I think they can, and not always, sometimes can be I'm going to get killed for this one, say a little slower on the course, but everybody can. And it's not a generalization, but the reason why I think that is because they're so worried about doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
They don't want to walk in someone's line. They don't want to drive their cart, where we want to encourage them to keep moving. But I think they're just more self-conscious about what other people think, and then they let it bother them. And then, you know, that interference starts getting in the way of them playing their best golf.
And being more sensitive to what is being said in front of friends or strangers, the way the spouse will talk to, the way the man will talk to the wife, and he doesn't even notice that he's, you know, he's being curt or nasty or dismissive, and the list is very long of how we can act. But I think that you're probably right that a woman would be much more conscious about, like, what is being said and how it's being said on the course.
Oh, I agree with you there. So those are some of the things that we want to help everyone, not just women, of really paying attention to what's under their control. And if I'm worrying about what you're doing, I have no control about what you're doing or what you're thinking, because I have no idea what you're thinking. It's only the story in my head. But if we can get really clear on the golf course of what's under my control and what's not under my control, then golf gets better with that in mind as well.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And it's so true. I don't even want to think about the times that, yeah, okay, I won't. But what I've witnessed, what I've seen other people do sometimes can be embarrassing and totally unnecessary. And, you know, it just, you know, guys, listen, you wouldn't be giving your playing partners instructions. So don't think that you can do that to not only your spouse, but your children. I think that it's not going to enhance your relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, I hear from so many women, they are reluctant to go to a driving range because every time they go to the driving range,
wow,
you know, right where I'm going,
yeah,
that some stranger walks up and feels the need to start giving them a golf lesson. And it's hard for them to say, no, thank you. You know, so I always just encourage them to say, I'm already working with a golf pro, golf coach, so thank you, but no, thank you. But that is one of the things that I've heard over and over in all my years of teaching, of women are a bit reluctant to go out and practice by themselves because someone's going to go up and feel the need to give them their advice.
Yeah, exactly. Just think of it as,
if I could ask a favor of your listeners, would be to, if you're dying to say something, at least ask permission first.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's almost like how easy it is when you get a phone call from a nonprofit that's trying to raise money and you say, oh, no, I already gave, or yeah, we're not giving to, you know, I give at the end of the year. Just think of it that easy. Just like, no, we already have an instructor. We already have those things, and you're conflicting. Don't put too many things in my head.
Yeah, because we have so much in our head as it is. You know, we could probably recall every golf lesson I've had in the last 30 years. And there's always some piece of it that's going to come up. So it's really hard to eliminate a lot of that chatter.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to help people as much as we can learn how to be present, because what we know about playing our best golf is that we perform at our best and our natural swing will come out when we're more present and focused. And what's really neat now is we have science to back that up.
Right.
We're not just making it up anymore.
We used to.
Yeah.
I was playing on Saturday, and later in the afternoon they were having a tournament of junior players. These are top high school players in the nation trying to get noticed by colleges. And one of the things that I noticed that was kind of upsetting for me is seeing the different faces of these kids, you know, their excitement about playing, their, you know, their focus, but the faces of the kids whose fathers were their caddies were very, very different. And that was, it's like, this kid looks scared. And that is not the way to go into a round of golf, competitive golf especially.
Yeah, so if we were looking at that and wanting to look at that, we go, you know, what did you actually see that made you think they were scared?
Their face.
You know, what were you observing?
Yeah, their face.
Not smiling or what?
Yeah, know? Yeah, not smiling and like the dad talking nonstop and the kid, like, you know, you just see in the face, it's like the lines across the forehead and the just like, I can do this if you just let me. And, you know, every parent should let their children make mistakes. It's okay. When they're learning how to walk and they fall down, you don't tell them not to do that anymore. They got to learn from it, right? So let them make the mistakes. They'll teach themselves because they're not going to learn anything from your mistakes.
But, I agree. I agree so much with that. And I've worked with many competitive junior golfers. And, you know, my style works for some, but it doesn't always work for others. But the thing that I always encourage the parents and the junior golfer to do is to discover things on their own.
Yeah.
Because when they experience it, they learn it's deeper, it's more permanent, and they're actually having that experience versus someone telling them about that experience. So I'm always encouraging it, and the way that I coach is much on the self-discovery way versus, you know, something very simple. I'll go, okay, well, let me see a hook. And they'll go, well, I don't know how to do that. How do I do it? And I go, you know how to do it. Just hit a hook for me. And, you know, a couple shots, boom, all of a sudden they start curving the ball right to left if they're right-handed. So just letting them figure it out, I think, is so important, especially in the junior golfer.
Tell me about an experience that you've had where the parent is that attached to the child, and trying to teach and coach, while you're working with the kid and the parent is standing right near you, right? And you could just hear them, you just feel them like the hair standing up in the back of the neck because they want to chime in. They want to give advice. How do you handle that?
It's very difficult because, one, there's this huge love and respect level between the parent and the child. And, you know, I never want to get in the middle of that to ever say that a parent is wrong. It's a difficult situation. I'm very fortunate. I work with a great group of elite players with a group called the Hale Irwin Elite Player Program that the Colorado Golf Association sponsors. And one way that we deal with the parents is at the beginning of the year, we have a parent meeting and we bring all the juniors' parents in and we talk to them about different things. Like, we want you to tell your child what they saw and what they observed versus you were mad, you know, already making that judgment. It's so easy to make a judgment. And letting the junior fail, let them make mistakes, let them have those experiences themselves, and even have the conversation. How close do you want me? How much do you, you know, ask the junior, how much do you want me to say when you're on the course? And it's tough for them, but we encourage the junior to really take charge and be, I would call like the general manager of their game.
Yeah, you know, be the boss.
Sometimes it's difficult for both the child and the parent, but it's a great learning experience that the golfer has a team of people. It's the coach, it's the parent, it's their friends, it's all of these people. And again, the clearer you get with how this relationship should go, it makes it easier. But it's very difficult in certain situations. And I think there's times as a golf coach that you're comfortable stepping in, and it's a difficult conversation to have. And then there's other times that I think that for whatever reason that, you know, I just need to step back and go, okay, this is how things are, and I'm just going to do my best to support the golfer. Because I think there's just some parent-child relationships that you're just not going to break into that. And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, this is great advice. I appreciate it very much. But I want to now take a little bit of a turn. Your golf school or your program, which is Experience Golf. Tell me about
it. So Experience Golf, I work at a Common Ground golf course in Denver, Colorado, beautiful here. And what we have done the last couple of years is we've come up with a monthly coaching program. We still do individual lessons, but it's been very successful, on numerous fronts. So you pay a monthly fee and you get, an initial assessment. You get individual instruction. But the best part of it, and the people, what they really enjoy, is they get unlimited supervised practices. And we have a few of those every week so people can sign up. And so we have specific assignments. We have games. We have competitions. So people come out and they go, now I actually can make my practice quality. As we know, people come out, they beat a bucket of balls. They go, it went right, it went left, it went fat. And they go, ooh, that was good.
And then we're constantly judging.
Yeah. And then we didn't learn anything, but they hit a bunch of balls. So they thought they practiced. So we give them that. But, and then we do the on-course coaching that the people just love. We take them out on the course. We're coaching them on the course. We give them assignments to try new things. People don't try new things on the golf course. And I love it when they experiment with new things. Try something different. We're here to practice actually on the course. And then we've created a really neat community within the monthly program. So people have made new friends. They have new golfing buddies. They, you know, spend a few bucks at the golf course having a beer afterwards. So it's a win-win for everybody. And it's a lot of fun. It's probably some of the most fun I've had coaching is having the monthly coaching program.
That's awesome. That's awesome. We had Dave Pelz on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about that you're not going to improve if you just, when you're practicing, if you just keep doing what you do well. You've really got to go out and experiment and do different things. I just got a new set of clubs, and I played one round with them, and I had a good round. I was excited about it, but I was thinking the other night, I want to go and take each club and go do different types of shots with it. I want to do low punch shots because I end up under trees all the time here in Northern California. So I want to do low punch shots. I want to see if I can, you know, my 150-yard club, can I hit it 75 yards, right? Can I come back and do different things with it? Those are the kind of things that I think when you're talking about experiment and try something else, as opposed to just hit your 5-iron, hit your 5-iron, hit your 5. Oh, I had a good one. Okay, hit your 6-iron, hit your 6-iron, hit your, a good one. Now I'm going to, you know, play different things in your head.
Well, I love that you do that. So we'll give them assignments and all kinds of different things. We put up hula hoops. They can hit through them, hit under them, chip over them. You know, so just getting people to use their creativity more and trust their natural instinctive ability to do things versus what I call barking orders at ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we're over the ball and we're barking 15 to 20 orders. Sometimes I'll ask people, so walk me through, you know, your thought process. And, you know, I have my hands behind my back and I'm counting and I run out of fingers quickly because they have a litany of orders that they're barking out to themselves.
Yeah. Tell me more about Common Ground. You're in the Denver area.
It is. Common Ground is a beautiful golf course. It's owned by the Colorado Golf Association, and it's on the old Lowry Air Force Base, and it's a Tom Doak redesign. So the course is a lot of fun. Big greens, a lot of undulation. They keep it in great shape. We've had the U.S. We were the sister course to the U.S. Amateur, and I can't remember the year. I'm going to say like 2009, maybe. Yeah. Might have been after.
It was a long time ago. US, it doesn't matter now.
Yeah, we're going to have the U.S. Mid-Am coming out. So we've had some really nice. We can't have a full tournament because we have a very small starter clubhouse, which is basically we have everything in one. But it's a great course, and I hope you'll come out and play it. And anybody that is in the Denver area, I think you'll really enjoy playing the golf course. It's a lot of fun, and it's beautiful. On the land to the west of the golf course is the floodplain. Which worked really well. Our course flooded out a few years ago. So it proved that it was a well-designed floodplain. But it's zoned. It will never be built. So we have this fabulous view of downtown and the Front Range. It's really incredible.
And being a sea level golfer, 10%?
I think 10% is
that how it works?
Fair. At Common Ground, we're at probably about mile, maybe a little higher, about 6,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So 10-12%. You know, it's a club. People tend to underestimate that. Yeah. So you'll like hitting it nice and far here.
Yeah. But do I use that formula of 12% at Common Ground on every club? Or, you know, is it going to be like that for my pitching wedges or my gap wedge as it is for my 5-iron?
No, because the ball speed's different. So, you know, on your short shots, you wouldn't add that much. Your short shots aren't going to be that difference, but you're definitely going to hit your driver farther and your longer clubs farther. So I typically say when you come to Colorado, at least club down one.
Club down one. Hmm. And you mentioned, you know, like playing the wind and that being a factor. Mm-hmm. How much of a factor, I mean, how much wind do you have for it to be a factor? I mean, if the flag's just kind of like hanging there like that, you know, you see occasional movement versus the flag being straight out.
Oh, right. But I think if you see the flag moving, you've got to make some compensations and some calculations for what is the wind doing. One of the things that I find that might be helpful for our listeners is that people don't tend to pay any attention to the wind in their short game. And it affects chips. It affects putts.
Really?
You know, little pitch shots? Absolutely. Yeah. So I think people really underestimate how much the wind will affect our short game. Huh. So I'd love to see people put more attention into that.
And then when you have the winds like you did on the first couple day of the 2017 Masters.
Yes.
Put your clubs in your bag, take your shoes off and go home. Yeah. Try it for another day.
Ugh. That looked brutal. That yeah. was well. You might get that wind here. So some days we have that. So
oh, is that right? Oh, you just scared me.
Springtime's pretty windy. Yeah, you might get snow too. You never know.
You better not. I mean, this is an annual trip that I take with some friends, and we've always talked about, we've been doing this for like 13, 14 years. We've always talked about going to Denver, but our trips are usually in March, early March, maybe late March. And this time we had to postpone it till the end of April. And we thought, okay, now we can do Denver. You better not have snow there. We'll be very
upset.
I'm
going to keep my fingers crossed for that. But just to warn you, we've had snow on Mother's Day before. So
that would be painful for us.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Last question. Test. Yes. This is a test. As a golfer, not as a golf instructor, but as a golfer, what's the best advice you've ever received?
What a great question. I'm just going to tell you the first thing that popped into my head.
Please.
In the bunker, a slow motion three-quarter swing. I don't know where that came from, but that's what popped in my head, and that's what I'm going with.
And you don't remember who told you?
I have a feeling that Butch Harmon might have told me that. I grew up in the Quad Cities, and he was...
Really? Oh, that's a whole other conversation.
Crow Valley Country Club when I was in high school. He was one of my first instructors, yeah.
Wow. And is that what got you hooked, or were you hooked well before that?
I was just starting to, yeah. And he definitely pushed me in the right direction.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so in the bunker, slow motion, three-quarter swing.
And he may not have said that, so don't quote me on that.
Yeah, right.
That was a long time ago.
You know, if I ever get a chance to interview Butch Harmon, it's like, you know, Elena told me that you said,
yeah,
who's Elena?
Exactly.
No, but are you talking about greenside bunkers or fairway bunkers,
yeah,
or it doesn't matter?
Greenside
bunkers. Three-quarter swing, slow motion.
And I think it's a matter of just getting people to slow down, but make sure they're still moving through the ball. So thinking of it more like a swing, you know, of course we see people kind of hack down into the, you know, dig the club into the sand, or they just get super quick because they're so nervous, they're so tight that their tempo gets so quick. So just by slowing people down basically is the bottom line, is really helpful in a greenside bunker.
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed, especially when like my friends, wow, Fred, great chip shot, right? Or, you know, great out of the mess that you're in over there, is that before I take the shot, I'll do everything I can to loosen the tension and make it slow. Because those little, you know, pitch shots, the knockdown shots, you have a tendency to grip it very tight and move very fast. And when you do it nice and easy, you're going to impress some people.
Oh, yeah. We inhibit our ability to swing the club naturally when that tension creeps in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Common Ground Golf is at, the website for them. I have it here. I know I do. Do you have it?
CommonGroundGC.com.
CommonGroundGC.com. And your school is?
Is experiencegolf.biz, B-I-Z.
Experiencegolf.biz. Elena King, this has been really informative and very helpful. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Fred. It's been a lot of fun. And I look forward to seeing you at Common Ground.
So for years, I've been flattered by listener emails asking me to do more than one episode per week. That's not going to happen, at least not from my end, but it can from yours. I just figured out something that you probably already realized. Now that every episode of Golf Smarter is once again available for free, you can listen 2, 3, or even 7 times each week by going back and listening to past episodes that have information that is just as valid today as it was when it was recorded. And since I've only missed 3 of 592 consecutive weeks of the podcast, you can listen to conversations about putting one week, short game the next, and of course, mental game strategies anytime you'd like. And now that all of those complete episodes that were only available to our premium subscribers are now online, go back and hear shows that have a lot more content than you heard the first time. Now, this episode is also available on video. Please subscribe to our channel at youtube.com/golfsmartertv or watch each episode at golfsmarter.com and get the added bonus of more than 100 video tips, tee tours from courses around the world, equipment reviews, and our full Golf Smarter podcast conversations. Remember, you can also stream or download any episode from our free Golf Smarter app for iOS or Android. So please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or SoundCloud. We're at Golf Smarter. Or talk directly to me by email from the app or at golfsmarter.com.